Happy Saturday. Time for another edition of the Home Improvement Show. This is your opportunity to get Walter Essie on the line, ring a ding a ding, and ask him all of your home improvement questions, concerns, quandaries. Did you start a project? Did you mess it up? Do you not even know where to start or who to call? Call us, 514-790-0800. I can see the phone ringing there. Jimmy's there to answer your calls. Good morning to Walter Essie. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing well. I had a week off. We missed each other that week. I left you in the capable hands of Jay Farr, and that went well, I heard.
That went very well, yeah. Jay was very capable of taking the reins.
I told him he better not mess it up, and he didn't. I know you guys had fun. Listen, we have calls coming in. We'll be getting them to them in a few moments, but you can also text us on the same number, 514-790-0800. We want to say that we're going to be talking a little bit later on about insurance, right?
Sure, exactly.
A little sort of like... Not insurance 101, but a checkup.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's when you speak with the people in control, if you wish, or that have a lot of insights about insurance companies, insurance policies, coverages. You know where the trends are going. It's an eye opener. So I was mentioning to you off air. I had a cocktail this week. With a lot of the decision makers, if you wish, in insurance, in the insurance industry. And it was interesting. It was interesting in how the direction of insurance companies is going. We were talking about, it's pretty much managed by actuaries and people that calculate risks. So, in global warming and the type of weather pattern we've been having, water damage becomes a big thing.
Well, we'll get to that in just a little bit. We have a question on the text line, 514-790-0800. We had someone text in a little earlier about an oil stain on the driveway. Best way to clean that?
The best way to clean that, there is a product, and I could only find it for some reason in Canadian Tire. And for some reason, every time I go to buy it, there's only one left on the shelf.
Something's wrong with the cars in the city. That means that they're leaking oil all over the place.
I've always been lucky to find this. I've always bought the last one for some reason. I think they always replace it by one. It's called Oil Lift. It's a fantastic, fantastic, fantastic product. What you have to do is you have to spray it on the stain. There's a dwell time, and then you have to either scrub it with a steel brush and water, or you just
steel
hold it
brush.
Down.
Is that steel?
Yeah, steel brush.
Okay.
Wire brush. The wire brush, you hose it down, depending on how deep. It went into the materials. Usually, from the first try, it goes away or it fades really like a lot. If it doesn't, you could repeat the same pattern. But it's a fantastic product.
Because the follow-up question was that there's no do-it like at home solution, like soapy water, dish soap, nothing.
I mean, there's always you could try. The problem with oil is if it's on a porous material, it actually penetrates in, so you need something to lift it. So I haven't really, there's no, if you want, homemade formula that I've experimented
that actually works.
With. I haven't experimented, to be honest, because anything that has oil, you have to break down the component, but you also have to lift if it's porous. Oil Lift have that tendency. It's not a very expensive product either.
Yeah, and you said you may have to do a couple of uses, a couple of doses. So you really need something heavy duty. 514-790-0800, your chance to call in for Walter Essie to ask him your questions on your home improvement projects, or you can text us. Again, earlier we had a text message about, should I completely replace my wall-to-wall carpeting after a small basement flood? I don't know what small means, though. If there's water damage, wouldn't it just be, because you always talk about mold, though.
So there's different ways of doing this. So the quick answer will be no.
Okay.
The right answer will be, is there an underpad? Because the issue with water is the fact that it remains trapped in between two materials. One of them is cellulose-based. So you could have mold growth. What you do is you could lift the carpet, especially if it's not glued. If it's like, let's say, stapled, you could lift the carpet cut the under pad that was wet out. That have to come out. Put in partial under pad. So you have to cut it to the okay. area that was, I would even be more generous because water does spread. And then you can lay it back on. Now, if this works in category one, category two water, if you act quickly and then you steam clean everything and you disinfect and you wash the slab and then you disinfect.
Remind us what category one and two is.
So category one would be clean water.
Like rainwater or from the sink?
Rainwater is considered category two water.
Okay.
So any water that's coming from a broken pipe is considered category one because that is clean water. It's okay. coming in clean. It does become category two if you don't remediate it within 24 hours.
Because of mold?
Because mold growth, mold activities usually start after 24 hours. So category two is anything that is earth water, roof water, gutter water.
Rain?
Yeah. So anything that's coming from the outside, it brings with it contaminants, uh-huh. light contaminants usually, soil, debris from pollution, whatever. So that's considered category two. And category three is
I'm guessing
sewers.
It's, oh gosh. And in that case, just out of curiosity, then you have to pull sewers, the carpet out.
Sewers, I would not take a chance for sure.
Yeah.
With sewers, I would not take it.
Someone just texted here for oil stains. Have you considered kitty litter?
So kitty litter is a great absorbent if the stain is recent. If the stain is recent, that works to absorb the excess material so it does not penetrate deep. That is great to use then. If this is a stain that's been there for a while, it works very you don't have as much success with that.
I say go to the Canadian Tire, as you said, if you really want it to work. What is it called again, you said?
Oil Lift.
Oil Lift. Okay, but I love these suggestions. Mary's on the line. Mary's been waiting patiently. Mary has a question or
Hi,
a comment.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, Mary. Take it away.
My question, I have some epoxy water base that fell down on a 18-footer steel canal that I had just replaced in front of my garage. Some fell on it, and also the cement around it is brand new, and also some fell around it. So what can I use to maybe remove this stain? Is there anything?
So repeat, where did it fall, you said?
The canal is steel, it's a grill.
Okay, so it fell inside it? Is that what you're saying?
No, just on it. So okay. Can I use anything to remove it?
You can use a paint thinner. You could use a paint thinner. Now, the only thing is, because it's epoxy, it's probably harder to take out right away as far as one application. So you might have to do multiple applications.
I see.
But usually paint thinners is where you would want to start.
And also for the new cement that some stains fell on it, can I also use that?
Yes.
All right, then. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Thank you so much, Mary, for that call. 514-790-0800. That is your chance to ask Walter S.C., president of Vernovco, your questions that you have about your home improvement projects. Another person just texted in here. How can you put new tiles? No, can new tiles, that's my fault, be installed of old tiles? And how? That comes to us from Ron. Can new tiles be installed on top of the old tiles?
So if he is talking, the quick answer would be technically yes, it can be, but there are like steps that you have to kind of ensure that they are in place beforehand.
Would you recommend it even, Walter?
I mean, certain cases I would.
Okay.
So if the cement is on if the ceramic is on a cement slab, then let's say you live in a condo. To take it out, you have to jackhammer the noise, the vibrations, and you know the cost might be a bit prohibitive. So that works because the base underneath is strong, right? Where I would have a problem with it is, you know, in a lot of the older homes, we have old ceramic that is cracking, that is lifting. So you could tell that the preparation initially was not adequately done.
Mm.
Putting ceramic on top of that is only asking for trouble. because it is the new ceramic is going to crack as well.
Really?
The most important part of ceramic installation is how solid your installation is, how solid the subfloor is.
The base, basically.
That is correct.
Okay.
So if the if there's any vibration in the subfloor, or any weakness there is, or any bouncing, then the ceramic will crack. So that's what this is how you want to protect your investment. In a case where the base is strong, you could do it. What you want to do is, the other thing is, what you want to do is ensure that you, the cement glue have to glue properly on the new ceramic. So you cannot have that least surface and use it as a, if you want, as a start point.
Mm.
You want to have it abrasive. You want to apply a primer, and then you're going to install on top of that. So now we're going to have proper adherence between the two.
Yeah, it can't be all slippery when you put the base down, right?
The glue is, because it's cement glue and it has to adhere properly.
514-790-0800. Some calls are coming in. We'll get to them in a bit. You can text us as well. We prefer the phone calls. You're listening to The Home Improvement Show. Welcome back to The Home Improvement Show, 514-790-0800. You can call us and ask Walter Assey your questions about your home improvement projects, or you can text us. Liz is on the line, and Liz wanted us to know, and I hear you, Liz, about the kitty litter, I think this is. Depending on the size, she says, of the sprinkle and the clay litter, it can work. It'll fade the spot. Liz, I hear you. We love the advice. We do love the advice. Julio, am I pronouncing this correctly? Jimmy is nodding. Julio is on the line. Julio, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Good morning. How are you?
Good, good. Take it away.
So I have a question, Walter. I live in about a two-year-old condo with a 18-spot parking lot below underneath the building. And you know where they cut the cement, I guess, for expansion so it doesn't crack? Those expansion joints seem to have gotten a little bit bigger, and the other day we had some water in the garage, and some of it didn't make it to the drain because it went in the cracks that were pre-cut, if you will. The cut that they made. Should those cracks be filled with caulking or something?
So, I mean, not really. It's really made for to avoid. It's when it's a big space and you don't want your slab with movement to break. So it's supposed to give more solidity to the crack. It's to the slab itself. Now the fact that it's getting bigger is it, you mean it's getting wider, the crack, right?
Yeah, slightly wider. Yeah, it's not that thick at all. It's just that the water went in it and. Okay. And I'm wondering, I guess it goes all the way to the gravel below.
Was the crack, because technically they're not supposed to go through and through. Are they through and through, like all the way down?
I'm not 100% sure. I guess I'd have to take a better look at it then.
Yeah, because I mean, usually there should be saw cuts, but they're not supposed to go all the way to the end of the slab, because you don't want any of the water, the hydrostatic pressure to come up. You don't want the... argon gas to come up. There's like a lot of radon, I should say. So there's a lot of reasons why it shouldn't be done this way. If they would have done it this way, then that's a mistake. If it is not through and through, and it's very easy to figure out. You just slab usually a commercial slab is about 8 inches, 6 to 8 inches is where you would see most of them. Although in commercial settings, we recommend more towards the 8-inch mark. So you just have to put some type of a tool, screwdriver, however the width of the crack is, and see how much down it goes, and then you measure it. If it's not going through to the end, which shouldn't, you don't have a problem.
Okay.
The water will come in, okay, but it will evaporate, and you're not going to have real issues with it.
All right. So I'm going to do that, and if ever it goes through and through, I'll call you to find out what the heck do I do now.
Yes, yes. And hopefully you don't need my services, but 100%.
But we're here for that, Julia. Thanks so much for that call, and good luck, okay?
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, Nick is on the line, and Nick has a question, I think, about his dehumidifier. Nick, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Good morning, Walter, and
Hi.
Good morning. And good morning, the Greek goddess of Montreal.
I'll take it. The check's in the mail, Nick. The check's in the mail. Take it away.
Okay, so Walter, this is the situation. I have a dehumidifier in the basement.
Oh, Nick, can you hear us?
And it died. I'm sorry. This line is rich.
Nick, can you hear us? Yeah, take it again from the top, Nick. I think we've lost Nick.
Hello.
Hi. Okay, stop. Whatever you're doing, Nick, stop moving, and maybe we'll get the question in. Okay, go ahead, Nick.
Okay, so I'm going under a little tunnel again. Here we go.
Okay.
So don't stop moving. Just keep on driving.
Probably the better advice there.
Okay. So I have a dehumidifier in the basement, and the thing was good for a year, and it died. So my question to you is, because there's always a musty smell in the basement, no matter finished or not, I took a bar of Irish Spring, cut it up, put it in one of these net bags, put it on top of the dehumidifier, so when the air shot up, I would get some of that smell of the Irish Spring. Now, is it possible that the dust of that Irish Spring went into my dehumidifier and stopped it from working? Somebody told me it could be the Freon. So I'm asking you, Walter, what do you think it is, or do I just chuck it and get a new one?
I mean, it's hard to say just like remotely like this, but it's highly unlikely that's the case. What I have trouble with this is I don't want you to mask the smell and hide the smell without getting to the source. If you have a musty smell in your basement, there is a humidity source that needs to be addressed. And, you know, covering it up is not going to assist you. So there are different steps that you want to take. Number one, you want to see how well is this dehumidifier working? Because you want to ensure that you are well within the 50% range, 45% range, not much higher than that. Anytime you are above 55% relative humidity in the air, the simple relative humidity creates mold spores. You don't even need a water damage. You'll have, so that's what would create, if you want, in a lot of cases, that damp smell. And I mean, we see it all the time. People say, like, look, my basement is bone dry. It's not finished. It's on concrete, but I smell the humidity. Well, it's because it is on concrete. Concrete have moisture in it. You know, you don't need water to create mold spores, right? So that's what I would start with. I would start with what's causing that that musty smell. It's not always a plus, by the way, that you don't have a finished basement. That's a misconception. Why? Because if you don't, let's say you have exterior walls on concrete, that means that concrete is not insulated. So the hot air from the basement meets the cold air from the outside, and you have natural condensation, which by itself is going to create mold. In a lot of cases, you see discoloration on the concrete itself, and this is mold growing on the concrete, believe it or not. So, you know, as far as the smell is concerned, there's nothing that could potentially, I mean, I would open it up just to see if you've been replacing the filter, I presume, on the dehumidifier on a regular basis?
Not really.
There you go. So
stop yelling at me.
We're kidding. That's
your Greek goddess right there.
I know. I don't even know. Well, I guess the humidifiers, the filters in the back of the dehumidifier, but it just, like, I used to collect, I don't know how many gallons, but the bucket used to be full daily for how much humidity, especially, and I have the heat on very lightly, because somebody said you should have the heat on even in the summer. So the heat is on like at maybe 18, 20 all the time. But it used to collect a bucket of water daily. Now, nothing. So I do put it on to keep on checking. Maybe it needed to reboot or something, give it a soap, but
Start by checking the filter, Nick. That means you're probably it's not working efficiently anymore. Start by checking the filter. That's probably the culprit there. And get yourself a hygrometer and just follow the readings of the relative humidity. I mean, right now you're not going to have as much humidity as you would have in the summer.
Nick, thank you so much for your call. And drive carefully, please. And call us back if nothing works, okay? Thank you so much to Nick for that call. This is the Home Improvement Show. You can always call us, 514-790-0800. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show, 514-790-0800. We've got lots of calls coming in as well. Donna has been waiting patiently on the line. Donna has a question about her driveway. Donna, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Take it away.
This will be the fourth time in 30 years I'm doing my driveway. I have a driveway that goes down, and I've had the same company for the last two times. I'm just wondering, are they digging down far enough? How far are they supposed to dig before they put the asphalt on a driveway that goes down?
We're talking about asphalt, right?
Yes.
Okay, and this is a downslope driveway?
Yes.
All right. What do you have at the end of the driveway? Front of the garage door.
There's a drain there, and there's a drain also inside the garage in the center of the garage.
Let's stop at the drain.
Okay.
Is it a square drain or a linear drain?
No, it's a square one.
Okay, so that will probably be your first mistake.
Okay.
The reason I'm saying this is a downslope driveway, typically you have a good volume of water that goes, that rushes down. It goes in a place where it's not really made as far as retention capacity. It's not designed adequately for that. So it's, you know, you're putting a small square box when you're supposed to have a linear drain. So what you probably have to also do is look at the bottom of this drain and see if it has a proper pit or a proper basin. Most often than not, you will see that it's a concrete drain. So if you take out the cover, look inside, it will be with concrete walls with no bottom. So the water goes down in a lot of cases and build up underneath and causes, wreaks havoc on the subfloor underneath. So with hydrostatic pressure, you're probably, causing you're causing all of these movements that are causing your driveway in certain areas to, if you want, to crack or to heave or to lift. So that would be one theory, right? Go ahead.
The box they had replaced it looks like PVC, I would say. One whole sealed unit with a pipe that goes into the garage from there. And the heating of the driveway is not where the garage door is. It's midway up the driveway.
Okay. So the fact that they replace that, that's a good thing because that will at least help. It's still, I would have put a linear drain.
Okay.
That would have been, especially then, it would have been the easiest to do it. They had all the machines. So how deep are they digging every time?
The last time he said it was 12 inches, but I'm wondering if it should be 18 or 24.
I mean, the minimum is 12, right? The minimum is 12. It's also the backfill that they're doing, how much they're compacting. There's not just how deep they're going. It's the compactation. It's also, you also have to look into if you have any high water table in your area, any stream water activities, that also can be a factor. So the digging down is one, the backfill is another, using the right kind of gravel, compacting adequately, and then obviously the paving techniques as well. But I mean, it's pretty much the water buildup underneath. What do you have going there? and then just the it's not normal. You said every how many years do you have to redo your driveway?
Well, the last time they did it was 4 years prior to COVID, but when COVID started, it was already heaving in the middle, so that had only been 4 years. So now I'm going to have it done again this coming spring, but I want it done properly and not by the same people.
So there's definitely something that is not right. That's 4 years to do a driveway is not normal at all, especially if it's asphalt. Like, that's really not normal. So I would actually see if I would go down to 18 inches. I would maybe, if you're doing it again, entertain the thought of a linear drain, because that also will help get rid of the excess water, especially that you have a downslope drain. And that's going to be costing you a lot cheaper, because most of the price is in the excavation and you're going to be there. And I would just investigate if there's any, what is the activity of the water table? Is it, you know, is your house built on an old stream underneath that passes underneath your garage? That also could be a factor in all of this.
On a clay base, like it's in Beaudry and it's clay everywhere. Could that have something to do with it?
That definitely will have something to do with it. So digging more, compacting more is probably the way you go. And to just ensure that you don't have a lot of water accumulation underneath. That's another thing that you want to ensure.
Okay, thank you so much.
Donna, thank you so much for that call. 514-790-0800. Let's see who's been waiting longer here. I see all of you, by the way, and I appreciate all of you holding the line. I think Mary has been waiting a little longer. Mary, can you hear us?
Yes, hi, how are you?
Good, how are you, Mary? Take it away.
Okay, so I had a heat pump installed a year and a half ago. They removed my oil tank. And from the first installation, when they put it outside, it was crooked. So, like, the whole thing was kind of at, like, a 45-degree angle. And it took quite a while for them to come fix it, but it kept going on auxiliary. Then when they came back to fix the unit and mount it properly, it kept freezing. Like, blocks of ice kept covering the whole unit. And once that happened, it obviously wasn't working. They came back and they said, oh, there's a leak. We have to change a valve. They changed the leak. And then it continued to not work. Following that, they said, oh, we're going to remove the thermostat because we had put a digital Echo B. We're going to put like the old school thermostat because it's not, they're not connecting with each other. So something's off. So it worked for about 4 months, and during the summer, our AC was not working. And now the company's basically saying, oh, well, you have to pay to get it fixed. So what I'd like to know is, would the machine had been at an angle the first few months have caused it to be damaged? I mean, I'm assuming that has a big part of it.
It definitely does. It's usually at the fan or the at the fan level. It will definitely screw up also the system in many different ways. What you want to do in a case where, you know, it's not working is you want to go through an elimination process yourself. So there could be many things that went wrong, even from the installation altogether. When an installer already starts with installing a unit crooked and let it be, that means he's not a good installer to begin with, right? So there's a very good chance that you know, your defrost cycle is not working. You have a, you know, did you look at your coils if you have any airflow blocked, like the outdoor coils, if they have any like lint on them?
Actually, you know what, Walter and yeah. Mary, hold on a second. We're going to take a teeny tiny break. Mary, stay on the line. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back to you in just a little bit. We have time for a little break. This is the Home Improvement Show. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show, 514-790-0800. Your chance to ask Walter Assey, president of Renovco, your questions, comments, concerns about what's going on inside your house. Before the break, Mary was chatting to us about her heat pump And Walter, do you want to recap or do you want to continue in your answer?
Yes. So Mary, I mean, I kind of understand where you're coming from. And the more I think about it, the more I am thinking this would have been a botched up installation from the get-go. Yeah. The fact that they had to come back and change the thermostat. My worries are, do you know what the brands are of the heat pump and the existing furnace? Did you replace them both at the same time or just replace the heat pump and the furnace was kept?
So the furnace was kept and they replaced the heat pump and they removed the oil tank. I do believe it's not like a, I think it's like a, it's not like a name brand heat pump, but I mean, he said that it was made by Cree, but it's like the other brand from that company. So I mean, it just, we got the runaround from day one. It was really never, and then he sent a different person to come check it out, and even that person was like, something's going on with your machine. Literally, they changed they said that they're going to change the amount of, like, for the defrost, because it was really like a block of ice. And then when it would melt, it would cause a huge skating rink in my driveway. But, like, the number one thing is that we just don't have heat in the winter. Or if we do, it's running on auxiliary the whole time. We've checked the ducts. We've cleaned everything. We've done everything that you're supposed to kind of, like, we've done the checklist. It's just, like, they're pretty much giving us the runaround now, saying, oh, well, you have to pay to get it fixed.
Okay, that is completely false. Number one, one of my worries is that you don't have a compatible unit with your furnace. That would be my number one worry. My number two worry is it was a botched up installation. It could also be a combination of the two. Now, as far as the next steps to take, you have, first of all, you have a warranty of at least 10 years on parts. So that any defective parts should go under warranty, right? Even though it's a generic brand, I mean, there's no name brand. There is always a brand, and there have to be a brand. But, you know, maybe they just got you one of these very low-end brands and, you know, and put it there, but still there is a brand. And any brand comes with a warranty. The least warranty I've seen on these, in the cheapest units, was about 3 years. You're still within that warranty. It goes all the way up to 10. The vast majority is 10 years, okay? What I would do if I were you is I would invest into calling another HVAC technician, and known company, good technician, and let them do a service call. Don't do the repairs, but let them make you a report of what's wrong in the system, in the installation, if the machine is not compatible. Because with that, you could make a complaint to the CMMTQ, and then they will force him to come back, okay, and do the repairs. So I know it's a kind of a...
It's a step back to take a step forward, right?
That's correct. And it's going to cost you the service call, unfortunately, which you can potentially claim back. But that's another story. It is costing you now anyways, Mary. You are paying the higher rate of hydro all winter.
Yeah, Mary, I think it's best to stop the hemorrhage there, Mary. I hope that helps you out.
Perfect. Thank you very much for your help.
All right, Mary, good luck with that and call us back and let us know how that works out. We have time for one last call here. Mark is on the line and he's been waiting very patiently. Mark, can you hear us?
Yes, of course.
All right, take it away.
Yeah, I'm in the process of installing a bathroom fan on the second floor and the attic is on top. And I was wondering if it's good practice to seal the edges of the fan from the ceiling instead of the attic by putting essentially the little gap around the edges by putting like a Tyvek tape between the gyps and all the way into the box of the fan to create a seal essentially from the ceiling because it's a little bit difficult from the attic. I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
I mean, you have the vapor barrier that you actually have, you know, it is your seal, right? So
the vapor barrier is in the ceiling in the attic, but because of a few forens and the installation of the fan, it's kind of hard to get it properly. We tried our best on top of the box of the fan. So I was saying if there would be some leakage, if we seal by the ceiling, would that also, you know, avoid any issues, any heat loss?
But I'm not following when you say from the ceiling, from the cover of the fan itself?
Yes, the ceiling of the bathroom, correct. Like where the gyps is and the cover of the fan. We would kind of seal it with a Tyvek tape.
Oof. Okay, I kind of follow you now.
So there would be no heat loss between the box and the gyps if ever...
there will be heat loss. That's not going to be really what's going to stop the heat. My worry is it's not going to be enough, and I would, if there's a way for you to do it through, after the drywall, through the vapor barrier, that would be optimal. You still need to work that fan, so that cover have to be detachable.
Okay.
You have to clean that. You have to clean that fan, you know, on a constant basis. You cannot have it sealed like that. Do you get...
No, we wouldn't seal the inside. It would just be the edges between the chips and the actual, you know, the edges of the fan.
I mean, it doesn't hurt, but I don't see it working the way you want. Unfortunately, you're still going to have heat loss. So that's not going to be really your answer there.
Okay, understood. So we'll try to get the attic as well.
That would be your best option, to be quite frank with you.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mark, thank you so much for that. We have, I think, 2 minutes to discuss. I know it's a lot of pressure, but we were doing an insurance check.
So, I mean, in the discussions that we had, it's just, you know, how little coverage now insurance companies, in a lot of cases, at least the mainstream insurance companies, are offering on sewer backups. A lot of them have limitations on water damage. And that's, you know...
And most people don't even know that. You think you're insured.
Most people don't know that. And what I would suggest is really do a clear revision of your policy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a broker, kind of go over it item by item. It's super important. And if, you know, you're
read
not going to want
to... Read the fine print.
Yeah, if you don't want to pay that extra insurance for a sewer backup, just ensure that your basement is well protected, number one. And number two, have very little furniture that if you lose, you don't really care, or at least put things higher up. There are ways, but just it's better that you know than you don't know.
And step one, go over that contract. That does it for us for this week's edition of the Home Improvement Show. One of my favorite parts, Walter, I didn't tell you, is as the show goes, you slouch down in your chair, and sometimes I can only see your eyebrows, and I think it's hilarious.
I do that on purpose. I like to work under the table.
He's mysterious that way. Hey, guys, thank you so much for joining us. Again, if you didn't have a chance to speak to Walter during the show, you can head on over to the Renovco website. There's an Ask Walter button, and he will get to your questions. Then have a fantastic Saturday.